The Acquest Podcast, funds industry conversations.
Hello podcast listeners, welcome to the Acquest Podcast First 18 special series. First 18 is a special report that Acquest is producing for newly authorised fund management companies. It's called From Survive to Thrive, and it maps out the key challenges that a newly authorised fund management company is likely to face in the first 18 months, in addition to giving some tips and guidance and insight on how to navigate those challenges. To coincide with the publication of First 18, we're producing this special series of podcasts, and in each episode, we meet with an industry expert and go through one of the key challenges that a ManCo is likely to face and provide some insight and guidance on what to do. Before we launch into the podcast, I wanted to let you know about a training event that Acquest is hosting on the 28th of June in the brand new business school in Trinity College, Dublin. It's called Funds Masterclass, and it's a one-day masterclass for Irish funds professionals providing key technical, regulatory and compliance training. We have a packed agenda of all things topical in our industry. We have a session on CP86, what to expect when you're being inspected, to help firms prepare for a central bank inspection on CP86. We also have detailed training on fund administrator outsourcing, depository record keeping and segregation, and then a session on financial stability and investment funds, looking at what all of that means for us. So if you're interested and you'd like to come along, check out acquest.ie and you'll find all the details for the agenda and how to sign up and get your tickets before they're all sold out. Okay, that's the housekeeping out of the way. Now let's crack on with the podcast.
The Acquest Podcast, funds industry conversations.
Hello and welcome to the Acquest Podcast. This is episode 5 in our First 18 special series to coincide with the launch of our summer 2019 special report called First 18 From Survive to Thrive. It's a roadmap for newly authorised fund management companies to guide them through the key challenges that they're likely to face in their first 18 months post-authorisation. In this episode, we're on to challenge number 4, which is compliance. And I'm delighted to be joined by two co-hosts this time, both from Ernst & Young, Lisa Keeley and Paul Trainer. Guys, would you like to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, very good, Danny. So Lisa Keeley is my name. I'm an audit partner here in EY and lead our asset management practice.
And I'm Paul Trainer, and I am an advisory partner and lead our wealth and asset management advisory business in Ireland.
Well, thank you very much for co-hosting, being here today. So I said that the topic for this podcast is compliance. And what we're really thinking about is the new ManCo is authorised and now they've got to get through day two and make sure that they keep in the regulator's good books and do all the things that they are required to do and have promised that they will do. So just generally, in terms of your day two challenges, what are they and how do ManCos kind of face into that?
Well, I think, you know, I suppose once the entity has been through the authorisation process, probably what they want to do is to take a breath and have a pause, because that's been a fairly intense process. But the reality of it is, day two, they're a regulated entity and the central bank absolutely sees them as such. So I suppose there's a number of competing challenges really that they have to cope with on day two, which is, you know, first and foremost, I suppose, fulfilling the objectives set and agreed with the central bank and making sure that they adhere to them. Secondly, I suppose fulfilling the objectives of group, because now they're, you know, a legal entity in their own right and they're looking to their parent in order to fulfill those obligations. And thirdly, it's the human side. You know, you've got people travelling, settling into Ireland, you know, looking to get set up in schools, looking to get set up in accommodation. So I suppose there's a lot of competing challenges.
Yeah. And I day two will, of course, be influenced by the eventual outcome of Brexit as to how hard or not it is. But what I would say is if we assume that it's a soft Brexit, Lisa's absolutely right. Folks need to get on with seeing through the promises they made to the regulator to achieve authorisation. But they also need to start thinking about how they are seen to stand alone. So when they came in, they would have piggybacked on a lot of group infrastructure as it relates to things like compliance frameworks, as it relates to looking at their capital requirements. The regulator will expect to see them standing as standalone businesses in the not too distant future. And that's why I mention the impact of Brexit. Where they need to go is beyond this being a vehicle to deliver a Brexit solution and therefore can be seen as a compliance cost, They need to go beyond that, and they need to start to think with group, how do they make Ireland economically viable in its own right? What will Ireland be known for? What will the centre of excellence be? So, for example, if it's moving toward a harder Brexit, might we see some of the newly established Mancos moving up the value chain and providing distribution services and being the hub for distribution into the rest of the EU?
It's a very interesting point, and I definitely want to come back to that in terms of their Irish footprint and making that business that they've now established work. Before we do, the regulator's messaging around, you know, Brexit and getting on with it has been quite clear. Once they've authorised the firm and the firm has made commitments about, I guess, things like recruitment, notwithstanding the uncertainty around the date of Brexit and the hardness or softness of Brexit, they want firms to get on with it, which is kind of tricky if you're in that position because, for one, you don't know how hard or soft you're dealing with the Brexit. And the other thing is, if you're using it as kind of a fallback position or a backup plan, you're now really going to pin your colours to the mast and get on with it regardless. Is that something bancos are ready for? They kind of...
I think some are and some aren't. You know, I think your point is well made, Danny, in that those who have set up in Ireland using it as a bit of a hedge are in a more difficult position than those who are looking to Ireland, as Paul has said, to, you know, make Ireland economically viable and use it as, you know, to, you know, kind of transfer functions over and a source of great talent. So going back to the those who are looking, you know, to hedge, I think it is difficult. And I think that they probably need to consider being very proactive in their discussions with the central bank in terms of, you know, the licenses that they need, you know, in a post-Brexit world, and were they the right licenses? And also the headcount and the volumes that, you know, they have committed to Ireland. Is there any need to refresh those projections? And I suppose our advice probably is to just be very open and honest with the central bank if the facts and circumstances of their commitment in Ireland has changed.
Of course, like setting up any business, you make predictions and projections, and how things
That's
play
it.
Out can be quite different.
Yeah.
So, exactly. You've made promises to the central bank. You've got to see those through. You've got to be aware that CP86 and the thematic reviews around organisational effectiveness are going to begin shortly. You need to be ready for those. You do need also to be in a position to demonstrate to the CBI that you're a standalone business. And as Lisa said, the business that's coming in hasn't yet settled. So some of the Mancos will be getting bigger faster. Some will be staying the size they are for longer. Those things need to be reflected in your frameworks, in your capital requirements, etc. You need to be able to talk to the CBI from a legal entity perspective about your plans for your business now and in the next 18 and 36 months.
Yeah, and I guess as part of that standing on their own, you're going to have a challenge where if you're part of group, you probably have, let's say, a UK-based compliance framework. And I guess that's your starting point for your Irish compliance framework. But you're going to have to Irishify that. You're going to have to nuance it and tweak it to make sure that it reflects exactly the requirements here and the slight nuances that there might be around capital requirements and what you file with your capital compliance report and that kind of thing. So I guess that's a challenge too.
Yeah. And, you know, and there is significant similarity between our risk frameworks, our compliance frameworks, etc. You do need to Irishify it, but the Irishifying, it's less about replacing the word CAS with the word CAR. It's less about finding and replacing the name of the UK ACD and replacing it with the name of the Irish Manco. It's more about looking at the shape of the business in Ireland, which could well be different from the shape of the business in the UK. So by way of example, you could find that the business that's coming into Ireland, relatively speaking, has a much more significant currency risk attached to it, given the nature of the client base that people are pursuing. That needs to be reflected in your capital calculations, which may mean that you can no longer merely say, well, I am a subset of whatever calculation is coming in from parent. Rather, I need to look at my risks in my legal entity and calculate accordingly.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess part of that process in terms of getting your Irish firm up to speed is just making sure you've got the right people and the people with the right training and knowledge that they know, particularly if they are going to come from the UK home base or they're going to be seconded or permanently come across.
Yeah, so there is that whole training piece, and has that training piece started in the UK before they land? You know, you'd kind of hope that it had. And then on the people side and the roles, Danny, there's, you know, the likes of the PCF roles, you know, that are going to be new, have, you know, I suppose, higher thresholds of responsibility and individual responsibility. And it just makes, you know, a lot of things a challenge. And I think there just needs to be an acceptability that things are going to be different. You know, they're going to have Irish board members that they need to form very strong relationships with. And they're going to have, you know, fiduciary duties, you know, MLRO officers. So, you know, while Paul is absolutely right, there is great similarities. The goals of the regulators are the same. The hows, in terms of how they implement it, you know, those nuances are very important. And the relationships that they're going to need to establish in Ireland are going to be hugely important to the success of the businesses.
And I would say tangentially, so we, obviously we work with a significant number of the ManCos. Everybody seems delighted that they've chosen Ireland, which is great. Not only are they delighted with the right can-do attitude, the right culture, language, etc., I would argue what we're seeing in the ManCos is a mix of folk from head office. Some of those folk are returning Irish. Some of those folk are British, American, etc. But what we're really seeing is quality. The ManCos have been set up with very senior staff who are taking their obligations seriously. And, you know, I kind of go back to there's a cost to all of that, and the ManCos need to get on to how they become economically important in their own right. But they're up and running, they're senior folk. I think the regulator is very happy with what they're seeing from the major ManCos that have arrived.
Yeah, and of course, when it comes to the individuals, we in Ireland have the fitness and probity regime, which is our way of assessing the quality and qualifications of people coming into those, particularly those senior management roles. And the regulator has very recently written to industry, all of the financial service industry, not just the fund ManCos, to sort of remind them of their obligations. So it's something that's very much on their agenda. But having scared the bejesus out of our new ManCos and told them all the things that they got to do and all of the obligations on them, what's the good news? What can they do to take, as you said, Paul, take this business and make it economically viable and make it a contributor to the group?
So it comes down to, and we have seen this with a number of the more established ManCos who've been here before Brexit, it comes down to concluding what your Irish ManCo should be from a centre of excellence perspective. And that will differ. There will be ManCos, for example, who will argue their real asset management team want to be based in Ireland. So that'll be the nucleus of their centre of excellence. Others will say, you know, we will use Ireland as the heart of our distribution hub into the EU. So conversations have to be had, and it will differ ManCo to ManCo based on the structure of their business overall. And you know, you could argue that there are opportunities to move significant middle office roles, risk and compliance roles, into Ireland, conceivably overseeing funds that may be domiciled elsewhere, Luxembourgish funds or even UK funds.
So I guess that maybe the danger is just sleepwalking into your Irish ManCo and not having that strategic plan in place for how you're going to take that ManCo and make it a centre of excellence for one or other or more parts of your business that you're currently doing.
Yeah, I think if you do that, you've missed an opportunity.
Yeah,
I'd agree, I have to say. And, you know, I think there's a further opportunity to consider front office. You know, and I know, you know, certain managers are thinking of it in terms of the trading, the hedging side, and also portfolio management. Mm-hmm. Now, that might require tax change here in order to, you know, entice those top portfolio managers over to Ireland. But I think that's the future state in terms of, you know, what good looks like for Ireland and the asset management industry.
Mm. Yeah, well, I completely. We are moving up the value chain, no doubt.
Agreed.
About that.
Yeah. Agreed. And of course, we have a very recent report sponsored by Irish funds, which talks about the value of the industry to the economy here. So you can see a higher profile for the industry and an attempt by the industry to just make sure everybody knows the value that they create for the economy.
Yeah. So Indicon were commissioned by Irish Funds to do that report, and it was released last week by Pat Lardner at the Irish Funds AGM. And I have to say, I thought it's an absolutely outstanding report. You know, it talks about the tax revenue that is generated in Ireland of, you know, for 840 million, wages and salaries of 1.5 billion. So, you know, really big, really impressive figures. You know, the Irish funds industry is contributing significantly to the Irish economy. And I think that's a really important message to get out there for government support in Ireland and also for Europe in terms of, you know, the new European Parliament, new European Commission, and making sure that we do have sponsors both within Europe and within Ireland for our industry. So I thought it was a fantastic report, Danny. Yeah.
And I guess having evidence like that, cold, hard figures, is very persuasive in getting that support and being able to influence and have things done that are important to the industry and have legislation amendments made or whatever, but being able to really develop and not stand still for the funds industry.
I agree. You know, even if you looked at the employment figures, you know, there were like 16,000 direct employment, 33,000 indirect, and 30% of those outside Ireland. So you've got the likes of PGIM in Letterkenny, you know, Northern Trust in Limerick. You know, it's a hugely persuasive argument to get politicians, you know, in our corner and fighting for the wider financial services industry here in Ireland.
And so the good news from a new Manco's perspective is that you're now part of an ecosystem where there is that support and that recognition that it is a key contributor to the economy, and then it is easier to get things done, hopefully, where there are initiatives that support the development of the industry here.
Mm-hmm.
So all good news then for all our new Manco's.
Yeah.
Work ahead, but definitely all good news. Yeah.
Good. Well, let's wrap it up there. Thank you very much, both of you guys, for your time and your expertise and insights in providing this podcast. I'm very grateful for it. If anybody is interested in getting hold of the First 18 report as soon as it comes out, please check out the website, click the button, and you'll be able to register there to receive a copy of the report as soon as it's published in summer 2019. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time. The Quest Academy demystifies funds regulation and jargon, helping you march up the learning curve. If you want to see how good we are at what we do, apply for free in-person 45-minute masterclass. Check out Equest.ie for more details.
The Equest Podcast, Funds Industry Conversations.